Blog Talk Radio.
I can keep on hiding, but I can't reach the surface. Everybody's living different, I just can't compare. Too much left to bottle, took another shot of pushing up, but I can't find a way to know.
This happens every month, I don't really ask for much. I just need to touch. Climb in this hole, I don't wanna watch it go.
No, I don't wanna watch it.
They just
tell me why I feel so stuck in my body's jumping. I can't change, no, I won't do it for the one driving. See you passing by, I just think that I deserve some change.
Hello and welcome to Debate Wednesday. I'm your host, Shumbra the King, and today I'm going to debate over some of the hottest topics in sports. But before we get to that, I'm going to quickly post a link to Facebook, remind everyone that we are live. So with that, before we get started, the number to the show is 516-418-5906. Again, 516-418-5906. Just opening up the chat room for you guys. Feel free to chat it up while it's open. So with that, guys, let's first talk about Purdue basketball. As of late, Purdue basketball has been on quite a roll. They've defeated West Virginia, Duke, Gonzaga, and the likes of Timmy and Julian, another Julian Strothy, or Stroth. Purdue's been on quite a roll lately. Purdue has favorable Big Ten matchups coming along their schedule when you include Rutgers, Wisconsin, and et cetera. But Rutgers, in fact, has been doing pretty good this year. Been following them since I happen to be in the state of New Jersey, that they've been doing pretty good overall, but Purdue, they've been led by Zach Edey. Zach Edey, 7'4". I don't know why this guy is not in some people's NBA mock drafts. He's 7'4", over 280 pounds. Is one of the top scorers inside the paint in the league, and can get it done when out rebounding opponents. It's been quite a whirlwind for Purdue, but the question is, can Purdue basketball maintain their number one spot in the college basketball AP poll rankings? Well, they've been atop for three straight weeks now, but when you include the fact that their defense has been rock solid. They've come off huge defeats as of late. And North Carolina, they've been knocked out of the top 25. Just recently came back into the AP poll rankings. I mean, there's sure a lot of good contenders out there. Houston, Kelvin Sampson. Kelvin Sampson, my God, has been coaching for a long time. And he's got Houston on the palm of his hands. With a solid record this year, ranked currently number three, could very well regain the number one spot with them being number one earlier on this season. Just like North Carolina. North Carolina has four return stars, had done a video on our YouTube page, which you can check out, youtube.com/user/sportskmtv. There I discussed some of North Carolina's top four returning starters and how they can make or break this season with Hubert Davis, depending on the kind of season they have, and especially depending on the kind of season they're having right now with Hubert Davis. Could be possible that these prospects go on to better, bigger things, or Hubert Davis loses his job. Quite that simple. If Hubert Davis can't lead North Carolina to a promising finish this very year, then I don't know what is for North Carolina. I mentioned Duke. Duke is currently in the rankings. It was recently mentioned on J.J. Redick's podcast by Paolo Banchero, that it was very hard losing for Coach K's final game last year when J.J. Redick returned to Duke campus, Leitner returned to Duke campus, all these former Dukies, and when everyone thought that Duke had a very good shot at winning the very last game with Coach K in the regular season on Duke campus, the chips seemed to fall, and the Duke Blue Devils went on to lose. As I said, Paolo found it a little disturbing that they didn't win for Coach K, but I mean, I think that just comes from the competitive spirit, basically. Some may argue that, well, you can't always win, you can't always lose with Coach K. Coach K shouldn't get down on his players, but he should. He should, based on the fact that every game, you should try to win, no matter or whether or not Coach K's final game. So I thought that was worth mentioning. But Purdue basketball, currently number one, and could see him maintain the number one spot, but against some favorable Big Ten matchups, they could very well finish out strong, even though I don't think they're going to maintain the number one spot for much long. Next up, who are teams' players to keep an eye out for at the 2023 World Juniors? Well, as some know by now, the 2023 World Juniors have gone underway. No, this isn't happening during the summer. Last year's World Juniors was during this past summer. And now we see the likes of Canada, United States, Finland, Czechoslovakia, and others competing for the ultimate prize, which is the gold and the World Juniors. Call this your World Baseball Classic, or I don't know if it reaches the magnitude of the World Cup, but The World Juniors have gotten underway. You can watch it, by the way, on the NHL Network. But now Connor Bedard, I mentioned him on one of the previous Debate Wednesdays. He's been doing pretty good so far, and he's shown that he can be more physical on the offensive side. He can, for his size, 5'10", 185 pounds, he could certainly be physical on the offensive boards. But going into the NHL, I'm not sure if that's going to be the case with him, although he's a rock-solid scorer and knows how to skate pretty well. Canada has a lot of depth right now. A lot of depth right now on their roster. I would say, you know, a lot last year, this past summer, we saw Finland go up against Canada in the World Junior Final, and Canada ended up being the victor of that. But now when you look at their depth, when you look at their talented roster, their pass at winning the World Junior, I would say they stand a favorable chance at winning the World Junior this year, or as you may say, next year in 2023, they have a possible chance to win out. The U.S., though, I think may stand a good chance this year with Luke Hughes. I think Luke Hughes is going to be probably one of the two or three defensemen in the league down the line. He's currently at Michigan, but I think over time we'll see Luke Hughes develop into arguably one of the best defensemen in the entire league. Although he's at Michigan right now, was drafted by the New Jersey Devils, was drafted on the same team as Jack Hughes. Parallels are between the years they were drafted, though. Luke Hughes was drafted in 2021, just last year, and He's probably better than Owen Power. He's probably much better than Owen Power. And stands a good chance at helping Michigan win a national championship this year at Michigan. Luke Hughes. It's not the only American to watch out for. Ryan Leonard and Will Smith are others to keep an eye out for. There are some talent at the World Juniors to definitely look out for. There are certainly some talents that have currently been drafted, and then there are other talent that are currently looking to rise their stock, rise their value in the draft, so get a bit bigger payday. Definitely watch out for USA, and then definitely watch out for Finland. And so far, their defenseman Kapanen, he's been doing pretty well. Kapanen, I think the way he's played so far, has a chance to lead Finland on to the World Cup Junior final as well. But if I had to put the pieces all together in one and decide who's going to ultimately win the 2023 World Juniors, well, I think I already mentioned it, but Canada just has incredible depth. most talent on that roster should be selected in the top, at least top 30 of next year's NHL draft and go on to win the 2023 World Juniors. Is J.J. Watt the best player of the 21st century? By the way, you can call in. The number to the show is 516-418-5906. Again, 516-418-5906, where you can debate with me on some of the hottest topics in sports today. Is J.J. Watt the best defensive player of the 21st century? I'd have to say no to that. J.J. Watt is probably the best player of his generation, but of the 21st century, I wouldn't say so. The only players to win Defensive Player of the Year three times is J.J. Watt, Aaron Donald, and Lawrence Taylor. Those are the only ones to win Defensive Player of the Year three times, and JJ, even though he's put on quite some performances, he showed it back in the playoffs with Deshaun Watson when Deshaun Watson was first coming onto the scene in the NFL playoffs, and then wintry 2011. When he first broke out onto the scene, pretty much Texans and delivered in a classic wild card game. He went to the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals and J.J. Watt were hoping the relationship would go well, and would go well enough into a playoff berth possibly, but so far, the Cardinals, they have been able to find much success in the playoffs with either J.J. Watt or Kyler Murray. A lot is going to be answered this offseason when it comes time to what they call a Black Monday, when head coaches get fired pretty much from their own jobs. You could definitely include Cliff Kingsbury. He became one of the youngest head coaches to arrive on the college scene at Texas Tech, and then later find himself in Arizona. I think Arizona needs someone who can definitely work with Kyle Murray, maybe more of an experienced head coach like Frank Reich. I think he didn't get a fair shake in Indianapolis. Someone like Kyle Murray, I think he can work with. And then also possibly Shane Steichen. Steichen has been arguably one of the, if not the best, offensive coordinators this year in the entire NFL. He's been helping design plays and concepts for Jalen Hurts, and things have been going so well for the Eagles this year when Jalen Hurts has stepped onto the field. Maybe head coaches such as that will certainly do some more coverage later on Black Monday and that matter further on. But J.J. Watt is memorable mostly for his time in Houston, having over 20 sacks one season, and has spanned since 2011, becoming one of the best career sack leaders. Call him sack stacker, if you want to call him that, if you want to describe that as a new trend. But he was a sack stacker, and would say he's probably the best edge rusher of the 21st century. I have to give some love to players like Ray Lewis, Micah Parsons, what Micah Parsons is doing right now in Dallas. Haven't seen someone like him who can create pressure, drop back, do many things you haven't seen a linebacker do. Just, I think maybe we're starting to see a new, with the pace the game has gone today and the demand for more agile linebackers is very well possible. We start to see many more talent who are built like Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons enter the league, but I like what Micah Parsons is doing in Dallas right now, even though I'm an Eagles fan at heart. J.J. Watt will play his final game in the coming weeks and then retire into his 30s as he's a father now. And is certainly enjoying father time right now, brings his son to the games and his wife, and I wish him all the best in his later post-career life. So how should the Mets approach the Carlos Correa deal? Well, if you haven't known already, Carlos Correa is still pending his physical in New York. The Mets signed him to a 12-year deal worth $312 million. Carlos and the rest of the top shortstops in this year's MLB free agency class accumulated up to well over north of $1.1 billion. So talk about the insane value Carlos Correa and the other shortstops are bringing to their new teams now. Carlos Correa, I think, would certainly benefit playing in a market like New York. Forget Houston, forget Minnesota. I think a market like New York, he can play in. He went on to the World Series before the Houston Astros and cheated. But you talk about a veteran of the game now, and he, according to many, is going to slide to third base and play alongside Francisco Lindor, Pete Alonso, McNeil, new prospect Francisco Alvarez. The Mets just moved out James McCann in favor of Francisco Alvarez. I think the Mets should be a pretty good team this year, even though they have Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, their two starting pitchers, well above their late 30s. I think Carlos Correa, he should accept whatever money he can get at this point with the Mets and sign there. That's how I think the Mets should approach the Carlos Correa deal. I think, and according to rumors, the Mets have tried to restructure Carlos Correa's contract. So I think with the Mets, Carlos Correa is going to get the best money possible out on the market with the New York Mets. So I think he should stay in New York. He should go for the restructured contract and sign a deal that is going to serve him well, and not only serve him well financially, but serve him well out on the field. So that's how I think the Mets should approach the Carlos Correa deal. Although, next topic, is it too soon to rule out the Green Bay Packers? I certainly think so. Right now, they have games coming up against Minnesota, Detroit, two NFC North rivals, and could see the Packers very well winning the past couple games now. Their rush defense has come alive. Jair Alexander had an excellent game the other day against Miami. Russell Douglas with some late game interceptions has pretty good alongside Jair Alexander. I mean, things seem to be clicking right now for Green Bay, even though their rush defense is their main weakness. Last time the Packers clinched a wild card berth was back in 2011 when the Packers won a Super Bowl. So it wouldn't come as a surprise to many by now that Aaron Rodgers could very well come back late into the season and help the Packers win a Super Bowl. I think it's very well possible the Packers could win a Super Bowl, but do some damage out in the NFC North and playoffs, and we can't roll them out too soon. But I want to hear what you have to say. Hashtag join the debate. Share your thoughts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram with that hashtag join the debate. Love to hear your comments, thoughts on that particular subject. By the way, I just got the notice that we're almost out of time on air. So if you want to call in and listen to the rest of the show, you must do so by dialing 516-418-5906. So, last topic of today, should the Nets trade Kevin Durant? Well, right now Kevin Durant's having possibly his best season ever. I mean, some have compared this season Kevin Durant's been having lately to his MVP season back in OKC. Now, most of the heavy load working has been off Kevin Durant's back. Kevin Durant is currently shooting as efficiently as better than Michael Jordan, Dirk Nowitzki, Allen Houston. He's Since 1996, those players included, and Kevin Durant, have shot very well efficiently. And Kevin Durant is just making all of his 2-point attempts and leading ahead of Michael Jordan, Allen Houston, Dirk Nowitzki in field goal percent efficiency. So Kevin, he's driving into the lane more. He's taking more control of the team with Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons. Those two can handle the ball pretty well and a dish off to Durant. But Durant, he's been doing pretty well off the dribble And we're just a month removed from Bleacher Report saying that now's essentially the time to trade Kevin Durant based off the off season when Kevin Durant pretty much put his phone down, had enough of the drama and rumors that or reports in this matter that Kevin Durant would stay in Brooklyn or be on his way out. Kevin Durant, like I said, put his phone down to all that, and he's not the only player doing really well in Brooklyn. When you take a look at Brooklyn's three-point shooting, their three-point shooting leads the entire NBA right now when you include other players such as Joe Harris, Seth Curry, Kyrie Irving, and others. This team is no joke right now. They're third in the Eastern Conference. And it begs the question, should the Nets trade Kevin Durant now? Well, my answer to that is no, I don't think they should trade Kevin Durant. This very well could be Kevin Durant's best landing spot right now, Brooklyn, and take Brooklyn far into the playoffs we've never seen before. It's been unprecedented to see the Brooklyn Nets go far into the postseason, especially with Kevin Durant. So I think the Brooklyn Nets right now are in a good position, shouldn't trade Kevin Durant. If Kevin Durant were to be traded, I was thinking Memphis lately, they're not shooting very well from three-point range necessarily. Desmond Bane, he hasn't really delivered on a promising year in Memphis, although Dylan Brooks has. John Morant, I said, he's a bigger, stronger, faster version of Allen Iverson, but isn't as good of volume scorer as Allen Iverson was from three-point range. John Morant, he's been working on that three-pointer. He's still doing arguably well regardless, but I could see the Memphis Grizzlies definitely benefiting off of Kevin Durant trade if they want to improve their shooting. And I think it'd be a good destination for Durant. There's even been whispers in the past that Durant would go to the Memphis Grizzlies. So wherever Durant wants to go, I think he'll land. And I think depending on the morale and circumstances, Durant could ask for a trade, especially to Memphis. But if he wants out, there's Memphis. There are certainly other teams, maybe Dallas, based off how well Luka Doncic has been playing lately. Maybe Durant wants to re-explore the West. And speaking of the West, his former team in Golden State, they currently are just one ranking ahead of the Nets in terms of attendance. I guess the Nets must have some Kevin Durant bandwagon fans or general net fans. Considering that the Nets haven't always had a full solid fan base surround the Nets, I could argue maybe some of Kevin Durant's fans have popped the wagon, so to speak, maybe. And believe it or not, on a side note, the Sixers, a team that was just like the Nets, below in the rankings in terms of attendance, And that's what I mean, that the Golden State Warriors, they outranked the Nets just by one spot, 15 in terms of attendance. The Sixers ranked first. The Sixers, when they were tanking and all, were ranked last. Well, they ranked first now in NBA attendance currently. So I thought that a little fascinating and flattering, considering I'm a Sixers fan. But I digress. Kevin Durant, he could re-explore the West, but I don't know. Maybe what legacy does he want to leave? A more competitive vibe or competitive vibe? These currently, I think, at one point I thought last year the East was better. For a while I thought that the East has been better, but with rising stars in the West as of late, Luka Doncic, Ja Morant, and others, I would say the West could be more favorably competitive than the East, but I could be wrong. I could be wrong. The Cavs are doing well right now. Darius Garland just came off a 45-point game the other night against the Nets. Even though I believe the Nets won that game, they've been on a winning streak lately, and I don't look for their hot streak regardless if it drops or continues. I think their hot streak of shooting, hot streak of outperforming will excel. The current notion that the Nets can't be with some of the best. They should trade Kevin Durant if he's still displeased. I think their on-court antics will do the talking, and right now it's certainly doing so with Kevin Durant. So if I have one more thing to say, I think even though we've seen some silly antics out of Ben Simmons over the years, he's still putting in some good performances, has stood to the test of time to be one of the more physical, imposing presences on any team's roster, a power forward or point forward, if you want to say. He's just so versatile, whatever you choose to do with him, and he's a very good defender, even though it's quite hard for Sixer fans to still fathom and understand about why Ben handled the situation he did. He took hardly to with the Sixers, or lightly, I would say, maybe, after his interview with J.J. Redick. He had basically said at one point in the interview that it was just time to move on. Maybe that was just the way of Ben Simmons saying that, well, the Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons duo tandem didn't work out. Let's just handle things in this matter, in the matter he did, even though it left a bitter taste in Sixer fans' mouth. Like me somewhat, but it's been certainly something seeing Kevin Durant perform the way he has right now as a I'll end it there. Thanks for joining Sports Kingdom today. I want to thank you guys for tuning in, calling in after the live feed kicked us out and, and took us into overtime. If you called in, listening to overtime, really appreciate it. You can always listen to the exclusive live feed of Debate Wednesday on Blog Talk Radio and find the broadcast afterwards on YouTube. So I want to thank those who tuned in live, and again, this will be later presented on YouTube. Like always, find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. We're also on Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, and now Spreaker for our blog talk feed. So I want to thank you guys for tuning in, and peace out.